this is the big fight, and I'm Maria Shakil. In past 1 week, Bangladesh has seen great turmoil. Sheikh Hasina fled the country and landed in New Delhi as student protests forced a regime change. Now an interim government has taken charge, led by the Nobel laureate Muhammad Yunus. There has been violence, vandalism and rioting. And there is hope that things will return to normal with a new government at the helm. But the tectonic change in Dhaka has left New Delhi concerned. First, the question of Sheikh Hasina's future. She's staying put in Delhi for now with no clarity on her future and final destination. Then there is the question of how will the new reality impact the India-Bangladesh ties, which saw an upswing under Sheikh Hasina. The deposed Prime Minister was a steadfast ally of New Delhi, and trade and ties bloomed under her. On the show tonight, we have a stellar lineup to discuss the impact of the Bangladesh turmoil on India, on Delhi-Dhaka ties, and the big question, what next for Sheikh Hasina? Joining me on the show, we have Dr. Shashi Tharoor, Member of Parliament of the Congress Party. We also have Harshvardhan Shringla, former Foreign Secretary. Swapan Das Gupta, former BJP MP and columnist, is joining us. From London, we have Mr. Sair, who is an investigative journalist. Shamsher Chaudhary, former Foreign Secretary of Bangladesh. Dr. Tasneem Siddiqui, welcome on the show again, ma'am. Professor from the University of Dhaka. We have Anjit Sen, international affairs expert. Brahmachilani, our very own expert here in India, strategic affairs expert. And we'll be joined by Sajib Wazid, Sheikh Hasina's son, shortly. Dr. Tharoor, beginning with you, the interim government in Bangladesh is already in shape. There was a lot of speculation about the role of Jamaat and other political parties. I think we have a fair understanding of how the interim government looks like. As an Indian and someone who has who understands Bangladesh and its politics and diplomacy at the larger level, how do you look at the India-Bangladesh ties now?
Look, I start off with the premise that our fundamental interest lies in close and friendly relations with Bangladesh. Our basic commitment is to the well-being of the Bangladeshi people. The Bangladeshi state comes second, and any individual Bangladeshi leader comes third. That would be my starting point. We are with the people of Bangladesh. We were with them in 1971. We've been with them through thick and thin, even when they had governments in charge of their state who were less than friendly to us. We've managed to keep our relationship on an even keel, more or less, and certainly there should be no deterioration in that relationship in the time to come. The interim government, as far as I'm concerned, is not any cause for anxiety on India's part, in that Mr. Muhammad Yunus is a known commodity. I've certainly known him personally. Many other Indian leaders have come across him internationally in various capacities. He's a highly respected figure. And if anything, I suppose he is somewhat close to Washington rather than being seen as close to the Jamaat-e-Islami or the Pakistani ISI or any of those figures. In fact, if you look at the overall composition of this interim government, not all the figures are very well known here, but there doesn't seem to be any particular reason for India to feel any anxiety about countries hostile to us having put their stamp on this interim government. The big concern has always been whether Pakistan and China will fish in troubled waters. I know our government can't speak this kind of language, but as a member of the opposition, I can be frank with you. And in this kind of context, there is always a possibility that the Pakistani ISI could have had a hand in some of the outrageous incidents of violence that happened during the agitation. There's always a possibility that the Chinese, who have a strong presence in Bangladesh, might have seen this as an opportunity to expand their influence. Those are the kinds of things that people watching relations in the subcontinent are most concerned about. But certainly, there is no indication of anything in the composition of the interim government or the initial statements of Mr. Yunus that would give us any cause for worry. Mr. Yunus has talked about peace, calm, stability, protection of minorities. All of this should be music to our ears.
Dr. Tharoor, the fact is that Prime Minister Modi and former Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina have had a personal understanding. Their equation actually ensured that the bilateral ties between the two countries really flourished. Do you see her presence in India as more of a matter of concern for us?
If we had not helped her, it would have been a disgrace for India. And nobody would have wanted to be our friend if this is how we, if we had treated our friend badly. No, I think Hasina ji, Sheikh Hasina, has had relationships with all Indian leaders, both of the present government and of the opposition. She is a friend of India's, and India is a friend of hers. And when a friend is in trouble, you don't look twice before you help them come out of their trouble, bring them and keep them safe, and so on. And that's exactly what India has done. I applaud the government for doing it. In fact, I would have wanted nothing less. As an Indian, I think that we have certain standards we must stand for in the world, and the government has done the right thing to bring her here and ensure her safety. But how long she wishes to remain, that's not for us. You don't call someone to your house and then ask them, when are you leaving? So my own view is we wait and see how long she would feel that she can stay before she moves on. And I think that there are practical considerations that will always come in the way of any moving to any other country. There are visa considerations and other issues that have to be borne in mind. For now, she is with us, and I think we should be proud of the fact that we have stood by a friend who's, when her personal safety was in danger.
Okay, that's actually very beautifully put, Dr. Tharoor, that Sheikh Hasina is our friend and she's our guest. But talking about the attack on minorities, do you think that the government has to be more vehement in raising concerns around it?
No, look, I mean, there are conflicting reports coming out of Bangladesh. There certainly have been some attacks, and no one can deny that. No one should deny that. It's a fact. There are reports coming and people have been killed. Facilities like the ISKCON temple have been vandalized. All of this is undoubtedly the case. At the same time, there is no doubt that there are also stories coming out of Bangladeshi Muslims guarding Hindu homes and temples and so on. So there's a bit of good news also during all the bad news. And Professor Yunus's statement that the government stands by the minorities and urges people to be calm and to stop the acts of violence, that's a very good sign. I think any continuing violence will be definitely instigated by those elements in Bangladeshi society who have traditionally been anti-Indian, anti-Hindu, and who frankly, will do whatever it takes to create the kind of conditions of disorder that may give them an opportunity to come again and fish in troubled waters, as we were saying. But for now, I don't believe there's anyone in authority in Bangladesh who wants to see that situation continue. And with Professor Yunus's clear and unequivocal language, and of course, his ability to ask the military to start getting involved in reimposing law and order, we hopefully will get some peace. One challenge is, of course, the military made it clear to Sheikh Hasina that they will not fire on any protesters, and that presumably will apply even to the agitators and vandals. But they can presumably take steps, tear gas, water cannon, I don't know, the things you can always do to restore law and order, even if you don't want to shoot at people, which by and large is my view as well, that we should not have law and order forces shooting at civilians.
All right, Dr. Tharoor, appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us. Let me bring in other guests. And Dr. Tasneem Siddiqui, how are the events unfolding in Dhaka?
First of all, I must say, from Dr. Shashi Tharoor's address, what for the first time I get is that, you know, things are getting better just after when you have a revolution. It's a student, a pivotal up to, you can call it a student's revolution to change, reform the whole system, which has been a corrupt, fake election, and this, you know, taking people into places where for 10 years they were kept underground, any dissent. So from that type of situation, you can't come out through a formal, regular way. So there was a certain unrest just after when Sheikh Hasina resigned and left. There were some unrests. But within days, you have seen how even the students have cleaned the whole, you know, people have done certain damage and other things into roads, into different constructions. So they have cleaned those themselves. And then traffic is maintained by them. And now when Dr. Yunus is in the helm, and it has already developed a interim government with his cabinet, and I think things are looking much better.
Things are looking much better. Shamsher Chaudhary, as former Foreign Secretary of Bangladesh, are you equally optimistic? And what are your expectations of the ties with India?
Well, not just being a former Foreign Secretary, as a freedom fighter and a wounded freedom fighter, I always am optimistic about my country. We have, in the past, also gone through different kinds of problems. Military governments, elected autocratic governments, flawed elections, people's disillusionment with the election process. And we have come out of it. So I think Dr. Shashi Tharoor typically articulated the situation very well. And he put it in the right perspective, that the relationship should not be with a person, with a family or with one party, but with the people of Bangladesh. And that's what I expect from someone like Dr. Tharoor. This morning, I spent pretty long time with the Indian High Commissioner here to get a feel of the things, and we were exchanging opinions, and I am known to be a friend of India, both as a Foreign Secretary and a freedom fighter. And his language was nowhere near what you are trying to say, that things are totally breaking down, is a meltdown situation. He was much more composed, much more confident that things were bad. It's not just minorities, you know. What is the sense of trying to vandalize Bangabandhu Museum? I don't see any sense in that. I don't see any sense in burning anybody's house, anybody's property, regardless of what religion he or she follows. Bangabandhu Museum should be above any debate, any discourse. This kind of vandalism is certainly not expected, but I suspect that people who are doing this have been against or have not been comfortable with the independence of Bangladesh or breakaway from Bangladesh, from Pakistan. And they took advantage of a very fluid, uncertain situation after the former Prime Minister left until the new interim government took office, a gap of 2 or 3 days. They took advantage of that. The other problem is that because of the total breakdown of trust between our police and the public, because of the police activities of shooting people in cold blood, especially over the last 1 month. The people didn't want, the police also were afraid to come out. They didn't come. And now they have been called back. The new Inspector General of Police has been appointed. He has met the president. And increasingly, the police personnel are going back to their thanas. I guess a very crash program process will be employed to recruit more police immediately, which is the first priority in Bangladesh for the interim government is security.
Yes.
And safety of the public and the property. That is the first priority.
Yes.
And Professor Yunus has made that very, very clear. The interim government has made that very clear.
And priority...
So things are falling in place.
Yes. Things are falling in place on that very positive note. Let me also bring in Sair, who operates with the name Sami on Twitter. So, Sair, thank you so much for speaking to NDTV. But looking at the developments here, there's optimism, certainly, which is being sounded by, people from Dhaka. As someone who has been, you know, watching the developments very closely yourself, the role of Muhammad Yunus becomes very, very critical at this juncture.
Right. You're very correct. And I think before I point on the role of Mahmoud Yunus, and I should also mention a more detail that what has actually brought us to this juncture, like why we are facing this event in Bangladesh right now. I have always said before that India as a bigger neighbor, India as a large democratic country who are around us and who are very good friends with the people of Bangladesh and the state. I feel that if India played its role correctly, today we would not actually see something like this happen in Bangladesh. If you go back, you would see that there are elections where only Indian embassy or the Indian High Commission would praise highly. Now, like, I'm very glad that Mr. Shringla is present here today. So I can actually see that in 2018, we had a very controversial election where votes were rigged, people are not really participating in the election, ballot boxes were stuffed with fake votes. Before the election, Mr. Shringla said, we do not really interfere in a country's electoral process. It is their internal matter. But just after the election happened and all the reports emerged that it was a sham election, it was a very controversial election, it was absolute looting, he commented that it's a very nice election, people participated from all walks of life, where absolutely nobody said this kind of word. So, you know, like, being the Indian envoy, when you show that you are supporting a government that is involved in vote rigging, that is involved in curtailing people's democratic rights, then what do you expect? People will, of course, get furious. Even this election, the last one, it was not participatory, but Indian High Commission people praised the election, that it was a participatory election. So if India played its role correctly, and of course India have massive influence on Bangladesh statecraft,
okay,
why they did not do that? And now Mahmoud Yunus, as he is here, we know Mr. Yunus very well, the entire world respects him. So there is no doubt that he will do his best to take the country to the correct route. But the situation in Bangladesh, of course, remains a bit fragile. At this moment, there are some sporadic attacks across. But I'm sure that now, as a new government has sworn in, things are going to be calm and quiet pretty soon.
Okay. Brahmachilani, as a strategic affairs expert, what are your thoughts, particularly about Delhi's dilemma?
Well, India, of course, faces a dilemma because India is the geographical hub of South Asia. It has borders with all the other South Asian countries, land borders and sea frontiers. And political disarray in any neighboring country directly impinges on Indian security. India has porous borders with Bangladesh. There's open borders with Nepal and Bhutan. So any development in Bangladesh, for example, this kind of violent upheaval that we have seen, directly impinges on Indian security interests. But I think, as far as Bangladesh is concerned, let me point out that Bangladesh now faces some challenging times ahead. You know, all this talk about revolution, that some Bangladeshis, you know, they're using the term revolution. There was also quite a violent upheaval. And today, as Bangladesh comes out of this crisis, it faces some challenging times. The first challenge is restoring law and order after the shocking lawlessness, the revenge killings of Awami League leaders and activists, and the attacks on religious minorities, especially Hindus, have not yet stopped. In fact, the retribution campaign is likely to extend to purges in various institutions with the aim of ousting supposed Awami League loyalists. Such a purge has already happened in the top ranks of the army, with one general dismissed this week and several other generals transferred. The second challenge, which is even in fact a bigger challenge, is to revive economic activity, which is at a virtual standstill. It won't be easy to restore the confidence of foreign investors after the large-scale looting, vandalism, and arson, including attacks on public infrastructure and setting ablaze hotels, hospitals, and homes. much of the Hasina era was a boom time for Bangladesh economy. Not only is the boom time over, the already stagnating Bangladesh economy has taken a major hit, with foreign exchange reserves dwindling rapidly. Now, this is a reminder that political upheaval imposes major economic costs. Consider the example of Pakistan, which has repeatedly sought IMF bailouts in recent years. And like in Pakistan, the military in Bangladesh has reemerged as the final arbiter in national politics. When we all talk about the interim government, we forget that the army chief is now the power behind the throne. It's the army that has installed this interim government. The interim government is made of what? It's made up of advisors. Advisors are different than decision makers.
Yes.
They're advising whom? They're advising whom? Nobody's asking that question.
Yes.
So, and you know, the third challenge for Bangladesh is to promote national reconciliation and healing after the violent uprising. And Bangladesh is a highly polarized country. And after the frenzied killings and purges of Awami League loyalists, national reconciliation won't be easy to promote.
I think that's point very well taken, particularly about how it's going to be tough as far as national reconciliation is concerned. And we have a special guest joining me from Washington, D.C., Sajib Wazid, Sheikh Hasina's son. Sajib, appreciate your time here on NDTV. My question is direct. What's your mother's plan? Sheikh Hasina has been in India for the last few days. When did you last speak to her, and where is she headed now?
I spoke with her last night. She has no plans as of yet. She's staying put. All the rumors about her applying for visas or asylum, none of those are true. What she really wants is to eventually go back to Bangladesh, whether that's to be in politics or to retire, it doesn't matter. It's her home. She has spent most of her life there. She has grown up there. This was going to be her last term anyway. She's 76 years old. She wants to retire in her village home in Tungipara. That has been her dream. She does not want to live in exile outside of Bangladesh.
Okay, so she doesn't want to live outside Bangladesh, but does it mean that when she wants to go back to Bangladesh, she wants to be back in active politics? Or will it be what you had told me earlier, that she is looking at retirement?
That I cannot answer. That you will have to ask her. She was in politics for her country, not because she wanted to be in power. She has been wanting to retire for the last two terms. In fact, she has been pushing me before every election to come and join politics. None of our family have ever had ambition for power or politics, so we haven't. I don't think she has any regrets in terms of what she has done for the country in terms of development and security. No one can argue. So no one can argue that her 15 years were not by far the golden period of Bangladesh. So at this point, it really doesn't matter to her. Politics doesn't matter to her, but she wants to go home.
So she wants to go home, she wants to go back and doesn't want to live in exile. That's a news point certainly for us because, you know, Sajib, you are right now the spokesperson of your mother. And over the last few days, you have been her connect with the outside world. There were reports suggesting that there are certain back channel communication or talks on between you and which is happening through your, embassy perhaps in London. For a possible asylum or some visa for her in United Kingdom?
No, as far as I know, I'm not part of that communication. As far as I know, we have made no requests. We have not asked any government. We have made no applications.
Okay. And what about your political party? Are you looking at going back and to ensure that the cadre feels energized, they have an election to, fight in the coming few weeks and months. So is there somebody from the family looking at trying to ensure that they feel not leaderless or rudderless in the absence of Sheikh Hasina?
Yes, I guess by default, I've become the face right now. I never planned for this. I never wanted this. I have no political ambition, but You know, I as soon as I learned that our party leaders were being attacked, their homes burned down, I said, I can't just abandon them. So I am doing what I can. I'm in touch with many of our party leaders. Almost all our ministers' homes have been burned down. My own personal home, my ancestral home, which my father had built 40 years ago, has been burned down. My grandfather's ancestral home, where my entire, which was now his museum, and where my entire family was murdered in 1975, that has been burned down. So in this situation, yes, I will do whatever it takes. People forget that, you know, you have two political parties in Bangladesh, two major parties. They have huge followers. Awami League still has tens of millions of followers. Awami League has not, it's not going to disappear overnight. You cannot make the Awami League disappear overnight. So, yes, elections have to be held as soon as possible. I think someone in the current government announced that elections weren't a priority. Well, this government is unconstitutional. Our constitution states that at the end of the last parliament, elections have to be held within 90 days. This government, nobody elected them. They have no mandate to run the country. And as you can see, they're not able to run the country already within, you know, it's been a week since the since they pushed my mother out. They've been in power. They have no control. There's complete lawlessness.
So
at this point, the only solution for Bangladesh is early elections within 90 days. And, you know, Awami League and BNP, we're the two largest parties. One of us is going to win the elections. I believe it's going to be the Awami League because of our record of development and security over the last 15 years. People always want economic development and security. So,
okay, since you just said that for, you know, you are by default now the face of Awami League, then are you planning to go home, you know, go back to Dhaka and lead the political party? Because somebody from the family, is it going to be family run, or will there be a new leadership that will take charge of Awami League?
That will be up to the Awami League to decide, not up to me. If the Awami League activists, they all demand that I come, then I will think about it. But it is not, you know, it is not, it's a democratic party. It depends on the people of the members of the party.
And what about Sheikh Hasina, the former prime minister?
Well, if the party demands that she be the leader, then she will be the leader. It, again, as I said, we are a democratic party. It is totally up to the members of the party to decide who their leader is going to be. It is not up to me.
And you know, lots being talked about in the context of her future, and you know, mixed signals coming in that whether she should be going back home or you know, going back to Bangladesh, or whether she will be going in for asylum. But you are saying that she doesn't want to live in exile, wants to go back to Bangladesh. How soon will that be? And has she communicated this to perhaps the chief advisor of the government right now, the interim government, that is Muhammad Yunus?
No, no, not at all. There's been no communication. The interim government has made no attempt to communicate with us. Unfortunately, as I said, you know, from today's statement from the one of the advisors, it's unfortunate. They've taken the exact same playbook that has failed before, which is now that they have been placed in power, they've been placed in power by a tiny minority and perhaps foreign support, they don't have the mandate of the people of Bangladesh at all. And they think they've declared that they will reform the country. Well, without a mandate, without a popular mandate, if you remember 17 years ago, we had an interim government that took over, that announced they would reform, and they failed miserably because they did not have popular mandate. This government does not have the mandate of the people of Bangladesh. It is an unconstitutional, handpicked government. They don't represent the people of Bangladesh. They have no legal authority whatsoever. So it is in their best interest to hold elections as soon as possible.
Okay, so if the interim government gets in touch with your mother and asks her to return to face trial or face the law, is she ready to do that?
Face the law, again, if you remember from 1/11, our last military takeover, they arrested my mother. They My mother actually had to fight to go back to the country. They arrested her and they put her on trial, and she was acquitted on all charges. And so, yes, my mother is not afraid of that. They want to play that game, we can play it again. What will happen if they try to put Sheikh Hasina on trial? Well, they can find out. My mother has done nothing illegal. She has done nothing wrong. If there are people in our government that have acted outside the law, those are the people that need to be tried. You cannot blame my mother.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us, Sajeev Wazir there, Sheikh Hasina's son, joining me straight from Washington, D.C., giving us the view of Sheikh Hasina as he has spoken to her only last night. Let me bring in BJP leader and columnist Swapan Das Gupta now. Swapan Das Gupta, thank you so much. How do you see the recent developments in Bangladesh with Sheikh Hasina's exit and formation of the interim government? And also, the fact is that she is in India right now.
Well, it's still a very fragile dispensation in Bangladesh. They managed to cobble together interim administrative regime, which is made up mainly of completely non-political elements, people who are either from academia, some from the NGO sector, and some from some students, which have no experience with actually handling day-to-day political affairs. So that's always a risk. On top of that, the political parties have very consciously stayed away from this interim arrangement. The BNP, the Jamaat, and a couple of the smaller parties, they've stayed away. And the BNP has made a demand that they want elections within 3 months. Now, that is a potential source of friction. That's number one in terms of the arrangement. The second issue, which I think is really of great concern to everybody, is the complete administrative void, the vacuum which now exists and which is translated into a spate of lawlessness in Bangladesh, particularly attacks on minorities, particularly attacks on Hindus. According to the latest figures which the Hindu Buddhist Council has given, in the past 4 days, there have been more than 200 incidents of attacks on the minorities. Now, that's a very, very large figure. And on top of that, some of these people who are at the helm of affairs, including Mr. Muhammad Yunus, who's the head of the interim arrangement, they seem to think that this is a conspiracy. In other words, there's a policy of denial. So there are points of concern at present. But of course, some of that concern is inevitable, given that Bangladesh has just been through such a huge, tumultuous sort of insurrection.
In this fragile time, that's your phrase, which we are witnessing in our neighborhood, do you think it puts India in a precarious position or perhaps challenging times for us as well, especially, in the two countries share a over 4,000 kilometer long border. And in certain places, it's porous border.
Yeah, well, it's more than precarious. I think challenging is really the operative word. It is a challenging time. We have a very large land border with Bangladesh. But what is complicated matters is that there is a large section of the people who were involved in the anti-Hasina agitation who believe that everything that was done by the Awami League administration over the past 15 years, particularly all the missteps which it took, the extent of corruption, sometimes arbitrariness, sometimes some steps which really can't be called very democratic, all of these were the handiwork of India. Now, that's a very facile and simplistic explanation. India was friendly with Bangladesh. India was certainly very friendly with Sheikh Hasina. But to suggest that everything she did, she was a complete puppet of India, is, of course, carrying things a bit too far. But nevertheless, this perception is very much there in Bangladesh. And that has soured the environment to a very, very large extent. And I believe it is one of the factors which is responsible for this incessant attacks on the Hindus, on the minority community in Bangladesh, them being seen as sort of agents of India. Now, obviously, India has a lot of interests in Bangladesh. There's economic interest, there's political interest, there are concerns over what will happen if the security policy pursued by Sheikh Hasina, which enabled us to return to peace in the northeast of the country, that somehow is sort of subverted. So there are these issues. And for them, I'm sure that they will be, we will have to have a series of engagements with people at the people at the helm in Bangladesh and sensitize them to our concerns, because I'm sure that they are not aware of the entire complexities of India-Bangladesh relations, which the earlier administration was. But there are complicating factors.
All right, Swapan Das Gupta, pleasure speaking to you. Thank you so much. Let me go back to the guest, Ranjit Sen. So clarity emerging from the family that, you know, Sheikh Hasina wants to go back home. She doesn't want to be in exile.
That's what has come out now. But there are reports of a few ministers and a few people from the former ruling party of Bangladesh who are traveling in different parts of the world, including in India. But those have not been corroborated with evidence as yet. But at the same time, the movement of the former Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina is still, it's still undecided. So one thing which her son said today, of course, that we need to take that into account. That's the first thing. But at the same time, there are reports which are also coming in, which say that it may not be the case, and she may stay for a longer period in India itself. All depends on what comes up in terms of the new government which is in place, the interim government. What do they do, and how? It's more of a wait and watch game, because I think the power matrix is reset in Dhaka now. And it's basically how you're viewing the current status. I think a lot depends on that.
Reset, but Dr. Tasneem, the point being made by Brahma Chilani on this panel has been that Muhammad Yunus is an advisor or chief advisor to the government. But he's the chief advisor to whom? So essentially it's army which is very much in charge.
No. He is the chief advisor to the president. We still have the president of the last government, and he is continuing. A constitutional arrangement has been made where he is actually the advisor of the president to run the country up to the election. But I would like to bring in two more points from the discussions that took place earlier. I think there are certain misperception about Bangladeshi's sentiment towards India. You know, culturally and other places, we have so many things in common and so many layers we have good relationship. But then again, why all of a sudden with Sheikh Hasina government, this, this thing that idea of people, that people are not being, the relationship is not reciprocal. Whatever Bangladesh is giving in different negotiations, like Mongla Port, like, Rupur energy projects and others, and then railway line or all these transit and everything, in exchange, what is Bangladesh getting? Think of this chicken corridor between Nepal and Bangladesh. Yet we wanted this for quite a long, but we didn't get it. So that is why I think this whole issue of Bangladeshis being a little upset with India is for different reason.
It is for an unequal relationship. Okay, Sahir, quickly, 40 seconds to you, and then I'll start wrapping up. I do not have much time on this discussion because I have to bring in Harshvardhan Shringla as well. Please go ahead, Sahir.
Thank you. I'm not sure if Mr. Sajeev Wajajoy is still on the studio or not, because he was saying that why his mother should not be brought to justice and his mother has not done any kind of crime. In the last 3 weeks of protests, since 16th of July till the end of it, we had more than 400 people deaths confirmed, and there are still many missing. Thousands are injured in the hospital, and we had 44 headshots. 44 people were killed with these sniper guns. How does he justify that? Why would school children, school kids be killed with sniper rifles, which should be used in conventional warfare?
Okay.
Of course, Sheikh Hasina is responsible for that. She has instructed those murders.
Okay, fine. Shamshir Chaudhary?
Well, I think any attempt to underplay the protest, which actually took a revolutionary form, would be a serious mistake, as some of your guests have said. It is not a so-called revolution. It is very much took a revolutionary form. It was peaceful. It was initially very, very peaceful. It became violent when the then Awami League Secretary General, or I guess he's still the Secretary of the Awami League, Mr. Ubaidul Qadir said, "My Chhatra League is good enough to take care of these hoodlums." And he unleashed the Chhatra League on these peaceful protesters of students, girls and boys, male and female. And the Chhatra League mercilessly beat them up. And these are footages available all over the world. They went into university halls at the dead of night and started beating students and throwing them out. Dragged them out, actually. Okay. Girls were taking protection under trucks and buses, and they were dragged out and shot, and they were killing all the people. Abu Said's image of being shot by police in point blank is for the whole world to see. Nobody can deny an image. It is a footage. A guy called Mugdho, he's a very bright student, distributing water to the protesters. He was shot dead, either by the police or somebody else, but he was shot dead from the other side. So those were crimes. Then this morphed into something more serious. It could have been avoided. Prime Minister could have been much more forthcoming at the very early stages, which everybody is saying. I was in another talk a little while ago with Nina Gopal and Dr. Sridhar Dutta. Sridhar Dutta is an Indian scholar who follows Bangladesh very, very closely. She's written and we've done a number of projects together. She has said the Prime Minister should have acted much earlier instead of being dismissive.
Okay.
About the whole thing.
Okay, Shamshir Chaudhary,
As regards Sajib Wajajoy's point of Sheikh Hasina returning, she has every right to return. She's a citizen of this country. She has every right to return. Nobody can stop her from returning. And if everything goes well, she can also contest in an election. There is no harm in that.
Okay.
The question is, when will that election be held and how long?
Okay, we do not really know when will the election be held. Brahmachilani, last 30 seconds to you, sir. Please go ahead.
India is the world's largest democracy, but it's located in a region with long autocratic traditions. What has happened in Bangladesh happened in Sri Lanka in 2022, 2 years ago. Remember how the collapse of government authority in Sri Lanka, like it's happened in Bangladesh, caused the Rajapaksa brothers' dynastic regime to fall apart, just as the then President Gotabaya Rajapaksa fled the country on a military jet. Hasina arrived in India suddenly aboard a Hercules plane. And just as protesters in Colombo occupied the presidential palace 2 years ago, mobs ransacked Hasina's official residence, stealing any article they could find. And I think the main lesson from Hasina's overthrow and the return of the military as the final arbiter in Bangladesh politics is that when weak state institutions allow deep centralization of power, democracy is unable to take firm roots. Bangladesh has experienced at least 24 army coups or coup attempts since 1975. Today, it will struggle to evolve into a full-fledged democracy, especially given the fact that the army has re-emerged as the power behind the throne.
Okay. So army is the final arbiter is the reading of Brahma no, Chilani. Thank
really,
you so much for your
agree.
Time, Ayanjit Sen, Dr. Tasneem, Shamshir Chaudhary,
no,
and Zulkarnain
and
Sahir. Ma'am, I've come to the end because I have to bring in Dr. Harshvardhan Shringla, former Indian High Commissioner to Bangladesh, who is joining us now. Sir, thank you so much for your time. Developments in Bangladesh is being read in multiple ways. Some say that this is also an opportunity for India to recalibrate its equations with Bangladesh. Now, with an interim government in place there in Dhaka and former Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina here in India, do you think India or New Delhi is in a very tricky situation?
Well, I think for us, it is important to engage any dispensation or government that is in power in Bangladesh. It is a very close and important neighbor of ours, and we cannot afford to not be engaged in one way or the other. Now, the interim administration, you're right, does offer us an opportunity to, take up where we left off, try and restore normalcy in the relationship, restore the normal links that keep both our countries connected, at the same time to try and see how we can constructively contribute to Bangladesh's own, current situation. Professor Mohammed Yunus has said that India, he basically felt that India shouldn't have described the situation as an internal situation, because we are like a neighbor, we are like family, and we should have been more engaged. And I think this is the time that we can take him up on his offer and see how we can contribute to restoring peace and stability in Bangladesh, to getting law and order back on track. I mean, we still see a lot of instances of attacks on vulnerable sections of people, looting, and robberies at night. I think minorities are at great risk. Incidents have increased. And up to 450, police stations are supposed to have been burned down with lots of policemen killed, actually. So there is a huge vacuum in law and order. And police are still not coming back into active duty. So there are concerns, and we can contribute in a positive way, in whichever way Bangladesh wants. And this is my own personal view.
Okay, Mr. Shringla, don't you think that India must get, when you say... how will India really get involved, in trying to resolve the conflict or attacks? Because that will be seen as interfering with domestic matters.
Yeah, so that's what I said exactly, that, we could offer to contribute in whichever manner Bangladesh is comfortable with. And Professor Yunus himself has said that nothing is internal between India and Bangladesh, and India, really should get more involved and see where it can, assist and engage Bangladesh. And I think that is where we need to take him up on his offer and say that, look, we are happy to work with you in whichever manner you're comfortable. And if that means that we can provide some guidance, some training, some, equipment that can, deal with the current internal situation, etc. I mean, we should be, be in a position to make that offer and take it up wherever Bangladesh is comfortable.
And with Sheikh Hasina here in India and the new government demanding that Hasina must return back to Bangladesh, do you think this situation will really and could impact the equations between the two countries?
Sheikh Hasina is a guest in our country. And, you don't turn out your guests. We certainly understand that there is a different dynamics there. But I don't see India, acceding to that sort of requirement. I mean, I saw her son, Sajib Joy Wajay's interview in which he said Sheikh Hasina will return. She will take up, a political role, etc. So it really depends on Sheikh Hasina. If she wants to go back, nobody can stop her. But she doesn't want to go to the country. I don't think, we would. That's my sense, is that I don't think we would ask her to, or rather deport her against her wishes. So it's very clear that, those demands are not very practical and not very constructive. I mean, we need to look at what we can do, together as countries. There's a huge bilateral relationship out there. There's a very multifaceted cooperation that both countries really, attach a lot of importance to. And it's really, if you want, people of both countries to get the benefit of a very close relationship, I think we will need to work on that. The two sides, that is the interim administration on the Bangladesh side and our government, will have to work on that.
Okay, that brings me to my last question, sir. As someone who has served in Bangladesh, I'm sure you understand and know about the challenges which are there in the country. There's that fear of radicalism. We are seeing continued attacks against minorities. Do you think the interim government will be able to handle this, address this?
Well, Professor Yunus has stated publicly that, he wants an end to any, unrest, any vacuum in law and order situation. He's encouraged restoration of normalcy. And he has specifically said that he does not want any attack on minorities. So we will have to take him up on his word. If you saw Prime Minister Modi's message yesterday, he said he requested, the protection and safety of Hindus and other minorities in Bangladesh. And I think that's an important consideration for us, and an important consideration for Bangladesh, because it has to be able to protect its own citizens. And I think that is something that will, be important for both our countries. And definitely that is one of our very important asks, that this current fear psychosis that minorities are going through, the attacks on temples, the attacks on minority communities, Hindu communities in Bangladesh, that level of, I would say, sense of fear and atmosphere of intimidation has to stop. And the government and the interim administration has to take all measures to ensure that their own citizens are safe and secure in their country.
All right, Mr. Sringdar, I appreciate your time here on NDTV on The Big Fight Show. We are putting out that interview and the entire show on ndtv.com. That's all from me. Thanks so much for watching. Next week with another episode of The Big Fight.